I'm doing today is from the same chapter that Kaylee dealt with last week. And the title of it is, No Difference Between the Prayer and What It Does. And it's really exciting to do one of these talks, as everybody who's spoken has mentioned. Ernest Holmes had this expansive mind, and when he writes a chapter, when he does a talk, he covers a gazillion different ideas all in the same chapter, and his mind moves from place to place. And I always wondered about that when I personally do it, because I jump from one place to another sometimes. And I asked Abraham about it once, and Abraham said, that's because you expect the subject to be linear, but what happens is that you develop momentum in your thought, and law of attraction brings in a new thought that may be on a different subject, but it's the same vibration. And so what we are seeing in these chapters is Ernest Holmes following this expansive, ever-expanding train of thought, all on the growing awareness of this vibration. And he almost always talks about oneness, which includes everything. So there we are, we're including everything. And it's such a powerful, powerful idea that science mind is based on, that there is only one mind, one God, one love, one light, one peace, one power, one grace, one life that is our life now. Steps one and two of treatment. God is all of this, and I am that. And I so often remind myself and say to other people, if when you get to the I am that, and it doesn't thrill you, you haven't done the first step right about what God is. Because when you get the love and the expansiveness and the light and the beauty and the grace that God is, and then you think about it as I am that, wow, just blows me away. So exciting to remember that truth about who we are. And Kaylee, when she did her brilliant talk about this topic 2 weeks ago, she talked about the paradox of duality and oneness, and how to reconcile the contrast, the sometimes yuckiness of life, with the incredible beauty of God and how we see it. And that's what I had started to focus on a lot. How do we reconcile that? And Ernest in this chapter says, or Aurobindo said, transcendence doesn't reconcile, it transmutes. It means that you rise to a higher level and you see it differently. And so then I started thinking about vision and perception. And I had a couple of experiences this week that profoundly impacted my thinking about vision, even though they were tiny little experiences. Last week, I took a whole bunch of pictures of ducklings. I take dozens of pictures of ducklings every single day. And in the middle of that particular day, I took a gazillion pictures of ducklings, and I got home and I looked at the duckling pictures, and I was shocked to see in picture after picture, there was actually a hooded merganser female duck. And I took a dozen pictures of that duck, and I never saw her. I was so focused on seeing the mother mallard and her ducklings, and the other little female duck was a little bit bigger than the ducklings and much smaller than the mama mallard. And in my eye, as I was taking the pictures, she was just one of those ducklings in the picture. And when I got home and I realized it was an entirely different kind of duck, it just blew my mind, because I had looked at that duck through a 60x zoom lens and not recognized that there was a difference between that duck and the other duck and ducklings. And I know the hooded mergansers, they're one of my favorites. And so I just was shocked. And then I got to a picture where I had two female mallards, two adult female mallards, a great blue heron, and the hooded merganser. And I posted that pictures, and one of my friends said, it looked like you were at the zoo. You had three radically different species. But even when I looked at that in the park before I got home and downloaded the image, I did not see the hooded merganser. It's like mind blown. It was there all the time. But I was expecting something different, and I didn't see the incredible wonder and beauty, because we don't have female hooded mergansers here in the summertime. It was migrating through on her way to somewhere else, and it was just something so unexpected, I couldn't see it. Even though it was there in picture after picture, she was there in picture after picture. And so I started thinking about this vision thing, about how do we see what's here? And what do we focus on? And what do we expect to see? And so I went to the chapter and found that I had, since I gave a talk on this 7 years ago, when we did this book before, I did a talk on the very same one. And I went back and I found my notes. I had 7 pages of quotes and notes from the chapter, and they were all brilliant. I loved it. And when I listened to my talk, and I listened to Kaylee's talk again a couple of times, and I was thinking about this chapter, and I want to say hi, Kaylee just joined us. So glad she's here with us. And
I could make it, yay.
So glad to see you. And so I thought, okay, where can I start to talk about this chapter? And I actually started in this book with chapter one on page 16 and 17, I often quote this book. And Ernest said at the beginning of this book, we study consciousness, the cosmic perspective of those who'd arrived at a state in their evolution where their vision is more completely penetrating the mystery of the vision, looking farther and deeply into reality than most people. They have all taught us the unity of all life, the indivisibility of all life, therefore the omnipresence of all life. We have to extend our consciousness inward and upward, because it will only cast a shadow equal to its own height and breadth. Okay, we study consciousness. And I am always reminded of one of the greatest compliments I ever received from my friend Duke Kite at Celebration Center, where after a while he said to me, you didn't start a study group, you started a master's program. And that was just delightful to me, because we have the opportunity to expand, to study consciousness, to keep looking further and deeper into reality and seeing afresh, seeing anew, extending our consciousness inward and upward. And Bob and I were doing our readings yesterday morning, and I picked the angel card of expansiveness, which is the same thing. Extend your vision outward. Ernest in this chapter somewhere said, loose the boundaries of your sense of self and let in more spiritual territory. Ernest said, everything that is in the nature of limitation is but the limitless flowing through us at the level of our acceptance of life. So what we see is determined by the level of our acceptance of life. And I would put capital L on life there. The broader life, the God life, the life of love and peace and grace and power that we talk about when we do the first step of treatment. And that's what he was trying to get at in this chapter. No difference between the prayer and what it does. He was trying to say we have to get to the perfect pattern that can express in this particular place. And there were a whole bunch of people that were quoted in this chapter. Emerson said, we see it as solid fact, God as liquid law. And when I was talking to Reverend Maria last week, she pointed me to some pages in the other Holmes paper book, The Philosophy of Ernest Holmes, where that particular quote from Emerson was there. We see it as solid fact, God is liquid law. But on that page, he goes on to say, Mary Baker Eddy said, all is mind and its infinite manifestation, and God is all in all. Spinoza said, I do not say mind is one thing and matter is another. I say they are the same thing. Phineas Quimby, who Holmes studied, was a healer in the 18th century, said, mind is matter in solution, matter is mind in form. One of the mystics of the 21st century that I quote a lot is myself. Sorry about that. I have all these books that I've written about these subjects. And Beloved said, one and many, all one, always, always. Only one. Marcel Proust said, the real voyage of discover consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. How can we have new eyes? How can we have new eyes? In this chapter, as he went on to quote lots of different mystics from various places and traditions, Ernest quoted Emma Curtis Hopkins' book, High Mysticism. And she said, where is the vision? Are you looking at a valley of dry bones or at mountain peaks and summits of splendor and glory? Because where the vision is, there is the imagery that molds the circumstances under which we must live. Where is our vision? Are we focused on the problem or are we focused on the solution? In this chapter, Ernest said, now we believe that there is a vision, a mental vision, which looks away from what doesn't belong and looks at the place that does, according to where the spiritual vision is set, in the realm of unconditioned causes, unconditioned or unconditional, he uses both in the chapter, unconditioned or unconditional cause. And in the very first chapter that I went back to understand this chapter better, he said, There is nothing to disintegrate or reintegrate. And I paraphrase the rest of that poetic paragraph to say, but only that to be revealed that has always been whole. That wholeness is what exists in the realm of unconditioned causes. And how we go back there, how we go back to that realm of unconditioned causes, I wonder about that all the time. How can I look at the world differently? And in this chapter, he said, we shall be trying to lift our consciousness to a point of perception of action without restriction. He also said, every form is liquid, every form is transparent, every form creates a light which can be seen. Every form responds to a language that addresses it with a consciousness of union with it. He was talking to practitioners about doing treatment, and he said, therefore, every treatment must have the tint of the absolute within it, in the mind of the one who gives it. So we are focusing on the absolute. He said the slightest relativity proclaims the absolute at the level of that relativity. To transcend the conditions, the treatment has to function in the realm of unconditioned causes by rising above the conditions. And I added to that, to the absolute, which is the perfection of God that underlies all the conditions. There is always a solution that has been created when a problem appears. And we are looking for that place where we can expand our thinking, broaden our thinking, and see that place of solution. So I thought about that, and I thought about the various visions that I've had. And Bob and I have been reading from my first book, which is called A Gift of Vision. So I have been studying this, wrote my first book about it in the year 2000, 23 years ago. Isn't that incredible? And that includes visions that I started seeing in 1988. So I started accessing spirit through the visual in 1988. And it's taught me a lot of stuff. And then I wrote four books with the Beloved. And my very favorite segment of everything I wrote about chatting with the Beloved is in the fourth book. And I know that many of you have heard it before, but I'm going to share it again today because it specifically addresses this idea of where is our vision. Beloved said, love is always a choice you have. You can focus your attention on what you love, what you have, and what's beautiful. You can also focus on what you dislike, what you don't have, and what's broken. Which feels better? And I said, oh my goodness, B, it feels infinitely better to focus on what's working and what I love. But how will things that are broken get fixed if we never focus on them? And B said, can you feel the difference between focusing on a problem and focusing on a solution? I said, in this minute, when I'm tuned to love already and talking theoretically, so sure I can. But when I'm in the middle of it, not so much. And B said, good point. Seems like when you're in the middle, you can't see clearly. It's kind of like being in a maze. You can only see a short distance in any direction. But oh, do you get a different picture if you can see it from above? What if you had an eagle's soaring perspective? I said, oh, that would be wonderful, Bee. From Eagle High, the maze path would be easier to spot for sure. But it would be silly for an eagle to follow a maze path when they can just rise on a thermal and go in any direction they choose. And Bee said, when you're trying to figure out and fix a problem, you are like eagles walking through mazes. That's one of my favorite lines I ever wrote. We laughed. I said, that's like a cartoon. I love that image. When I'm feeling stuck, I can imagine that I'm an eagle trying to walk a maze. Then how do I fly, Bee? Doesn't seem like there's room for a 6-foot wingspan in a narrow passage. And Bee said, lift your eyes. Stop, relax, and look up. Your wings will take you where your eyes focus. The maze walls are not nearly as substantial as they seem. I said, I was reading the other day that Ernest Holmes said the world is not solid matter, but liquid form. Bee said, everything shifts magically with a change in perspective. I said, awesome, Bee. I'm seeing that afresh this morning. They said, when you tune to love, you look up. You look at life from a higher frequency. As you tune up, you connect more with us. We can then communicate to you the higher perspective we can see, and we see it all. I have pages of stuff here, and the other part of this chapter that struck me as really important to highlight is that he wrote a whole section in this chapter about ease. He said, relax and let it happen. Our attempts to force too much defeat us. And he said, you don't force anything. You don't coerce anything. You don't hold thoughts. You don't put in anything. You always take it out. Always. It's already in there. It's already in there. He said, every form is liquid. Every form is transparent. Every form contains a light which can be seen. Every form responds to the language that addresses it with the consciousness of union. We are focusing on the consciousness of union. So I'm going to end today a little quicker than I normally do. Sorry, Brenda, she said talk longer. I'm going to quote myself from a daily guide I wrote for Science of Mind magazine in August of the year 2000. That was the year I published the book, A Gift of Vision. And I quoted the mystic Julian of Norwich, who wrote, the fullness of joy is to behold God in everything. To behold God in everything. That's the essence of oneness. And I went on to say, consciously practicing the presence, I feel life become more spacious. I walk amid the flowering trees of spring, delighting in the petal showers created by warm breezes. A robin and I watch bright clouds lazily navigating an azure summer sky. Leaves, newly crisped by cooler winds, rustle under my feet in autumn. A winter storm howls outside my window as I snuggle, grateful to be warm. Joy expands. 5 minutes with the wind is a vacation. Fresh awareness discovers beauty, grace, and yes, God, in all the world to love. Joy is ever present in the details of life. the moment we look, listen, or feel for it. We don't take it out. We don't have to. It's already in there. We allow it to reveal the wholeness that is already in there. By focusing on that consciousness of oneness, by focusing on the light and the love. And that line in the article, I think it was either in the New York Times or the Washington Post, about the James Webb telescope the other day that said, light is infinite. Light is infinite. And this is coming from the scientists who spent billions of dollars to create this telescope that sees the expansion of the universe. Light is infinite, and we are light, and light we shall remain. So we are infinite. We will never hit a glass ceiling of how expansive it can be. We can continue to choose to look for the love, choose to feel for the joy, choose to experience, to hear the guidance, to connect with spirit, and to love our lives. That's what we're here to do. I'm always so grateful when I get here by the end of the talk. I remember what I'm here to do, hooray. So that's what I had to share today. And I really appreciate you all giving me this opportunity to share my heart and my travels and my passion for this work. And so it is.